Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Social Impact Solutions podcast. Today, I am joined by Lauren Elise Tudor, who is the founder and CEO of Architect Philanthropic Collective, a strategy building consulting firm dedicated to sustainable community-centered philanthropy. With extensive experience spanning grassroots organizations, major foundations, and corporate philanthropy, Lauren helps small to medium-sized nonprofits maximize their fundraising potential and build sustainable foundations for long-term success. As a chartered advisor in philanthropy, a certified impact philanthropy advisor, and a certified fundraising executive, Lauren has supported more than 50 nonprofit organizations, helping them achieve an average fundraising growth of 37.6% with their first year of partnership. So stay tuned as I talk to Lauren today about becoming a more community-centered nonprofit organization and how this can massively increase your philanthropic and fundraising efforts. Welcome to the Social Impact Solutions podcast, where we help mission-driven leaders measure and market their social impact so they can raise more money and do more good. I'm Lauren.
And I'm John Mark. Together, we bring you expert insights, practical strategies, and real-world stories to help you create more meaningful and measurable change. This podcast is designed for purpose-driven leaders. So let's dive in, explore what's possible, and take your mission to the next level.
Hi, Lauren. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here. We're super excited to have you on the podcast today. And I'm really excited to have a conversation about a very important topic, community-centric philanthropy and fundraising. So I'm thrilled that you're here with us today from Architect Philanthropic Collective. This is what you and your team are all about, helping nonprofits be more community-centered in their philanthropic and fundraising efforts. So we'd love to dive right in and hear from you on why this topic matters and honestly hear your definition of what is community-centered philanthropy, just so we're all on the same page from the beginning here.
Yeah, absolutely. Always lovely to talk to another Lauren. So thanks for that warm welcome. But yeah, I'm Lauren Tudor. I'm the founder of Architect Philanthropic Collective. And we are celebrating our fifth anniversary this year, which feels both humbling and energizing at the same time. Before starting Architect, I spent nearly a dozen years or so working across the nonprofit landscape, everything from grassroots organizations to major foundations. And what I kept noticing was that small and mid-sized nonprofits often had these incredible and amazing missions, but really struggled with underdeveloped fundraising infrastructures. And they just needed a partner who understood both the practical realities of their work and the strategic approaches we could take that could help them thrive. And so that's what we do here at Architect. We really help organizations build sustainable funding models that align to their values and amplify their impact. And so what I really love most about this work is being able to see up close organizations transform from constantly chasing funding to confidently advancing their missions with the resources they already have to address things that they need. And so when we think about what community-centric fundraising is, why this conversation is so imperative to have right now, is because we're really in a significant transition in the field of philanthropy. Organizations are facing really intense obstacles to funding and competition. Threats are mounting and economic pressures are toppling all over themselves, all while they're being asked to deliver on their mission with less resources. And so at the same time, we're witnessing this massive wealth transfer happening as well. I think the stat is around $124 trillion moving between generations or something like that. And it's really having an effect on how it reshapes how giving happens. And so I really believe we are at an inflection point where just the old models of fundraising and philanthropy just aren't really sufficing. And I think that's where community-centric fundraising really comes in. The organizations of the future that will thrive aren't necessarily the largest or will be the most well-known, but I believe that they are the ones building authentic relationships right now with the communities that they're in partnership with and approaching funding as a collaborative effort rather than a one-way transaction. So you know, we're really hoping that through our conversation today, we can illustrate some very practical ways that organizations of any size might shift their thinking as well as their actions toward a more community-centric approach that creates both greater impact and more sustainable funding models.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for setting the stage. I think you have already shared incredible insights and such important pieces just in that quick little intro. I love what you said about, you know, approaching fundraising as more of a true partnership. And you use the word being collaborative, which I resonate with strongly. At Social Impact Solutions, our team is very collaborative. You know, there are some people that look at the world in more of a zero-sum approach, others in more of a positive-sum approach. And I think we all know that not just with nonprofits, not just with philanthropy, but truly in all aspects of the world, for-profit, nonprofit, no matter what you're doing, taking more of a collaborative, positive-sum approach wins in the long run, just like you said. Yeah. So I really appreciate that perspective. I really appreciate what you and your team are doing to help organizations with that. What are some examples that you're seeing organizations successfully transition from more of that donor-centric, more traditional philanthropic approach to a more community-centered philanthropic or fundraising approach?
Yeah, traditional philanthropy dynamics kind of demand that the donor is at the center. And I think that there is some value there. I don't want to absolutely snuff out that this isn't a model that hasn't been effective. However, I just think that we're seeing a really significant and intentional shift towards a more community-centric approach. And so a really great example of that in my career, several years back, I was able, you know, I was a development officer and I accompanied the executive director on, you know, one of those very fancy major donor visits. And so this one happened to be at their corporate office. And so we were there to meet the donor for lunch, and it wasn't an ordinary office. You know, it was occupied on the top floor of this really fantastic downtown high rise, floor to ceiling artwork, and is overlooking the city. Beautiful. But the contrast of why we were there, the mission we were there to serve, and just the space that we were in physically was super striking. You know, below us was the sprawl of the very neighborhoods we were actually there to discuss and the communities that were facing housing instability, food insecurity, and other limited economic opportunities. And so as we're in this meeting presenting our case, I really kept noticing how the conversation was shifting. What started as a discussion about community strengths and collaborative solutions really incrementally transformed into something different. The donor began asking questions that felt more like an investment pitch. What's your ROI? How do you measure success compared to organizations that are like you? You know, what's your approach? Why is your approach better than X, Y, and Z entity over here? And so by the end of that meeting, we really found ourselves kind of emphasizing the problems over the possibilities. And we were competing against peer organizations for these dollars. And that experience really illuminated what I saw as a fundamental contradiction in traditional philanthropy. It's that we use language of generosity. We often operate within the frameworks of competition and investment. And so, you know, what are organizations supposed to do? They're already pushed to the margins to emphasize community deficits. Like, how much can we admire the problem? How much more can we demonstrate that we are outpacing our peers? And promise X, Y, and Z specific return. There's no promises in this work. While donors get to maintain control and decision-making prowess in emphasizing that investment to make it seem worthwhile for them. So, you know, it really helped me think through what we need to ask ourselves. Are we actually building genuine community capacity, or are we reinforcing power imbalances and maintaining the status quo? And a lot of times, if we stop to pause to ask that question, I think we'd not be happy with the response. So it really pushes me to become more. I'm a former public ally. And so a lot of that work is building into community assets. And it really became clear to me in that work that I needed to become a stronger advocate for applying the concept of asset-based community development principles, especially to nonprofit fundraising and philanthropy as a whole. And if you're unfamiliar with that concept as a whole, essentially, it is emphasizing and identifying existing community strengths and resources that are already driving positive change rather than focusing on the deficits of a community. And so by identifying and mobilizing these existing assets, we can bring a different mindset to fundraising and grant making even. And then it shifts everything. Rather than asking what is wrong, can we fix it? You start by asking what's strong and can we strengthen it? And it just transforms the dynamic. So that is where we come in as a company, as an organization, and coaching a lot of our clients and thinking through, like, you already have a gold mine of things working towards your benefit. How can we continue to leverage that for your future?
Absolutely. And we see it all the time. You see it all the time. I think anyone that works with nonprofits, particularly in the fundraising context, it's challenging. And donors aren't necessarily wrong in wanting to see return on investment. We at Social Impact Solutions focus a lot on social return on investment, SROI. Right. And there's value to that. But to your point, you know, there's also a place for nonprofits and charitable efforts and philanthropy for a reason. Otherwise, they would be for-profits that are not solely, but predominantly trying to generate revenue. And so it is a balance and it's a challenge. And, you know, I think you focus on a lot of the community-centric components. I love what you just said about really looking at what's already working well and how can you grow that? How can you scale that? And taking away more of that scarcity mindset or constantly fundraising out of, you know, what you don't have or what you're going to lose, while at the same time sharing with donors and other funders and other stakeholders what you have accomplished and the impact, the measurable impact that's been created. You know, there's a lot of value in that too. So it's a balancing act, and the nonprofit organizations get stuck in the middle too often.
Correct.
When they're already under-resourced and don't have enough time, don't have enough personnel. Shifting gears a little bit, obviously, with fundraising, we do tend to focus on donors and funders a lot. But what are some of the upsides of community-centered philanthropy for other stakeholders? So beneficiaries, the people that organizations serve, maybe even the upside for nonprofits and volunteers and the employees internally.
Yeah.
What are some of the upsides that you see there for stakeholders other than donors?
Yeah, what we've been able to see by adopting this type of practice into the field is that community-centered philanthropic approaches and fundraising approaches really fundamentally embodies that asset-based thinking. So instead of starting with the preferences of the donor, we're really able to begin by interviewing everybody else and everything else. And so we're recognizing and valuing community wisdom, leadership that already structures that already exist or existing resources. We are fortunate to partner with Duke University annually for a series of workshops for some of their nonprofit management students. And we love the work that we're doing with them because we get this wonderful cohort of people where we get to point out specifically, these are the existing assets that are in your community. And we do a proprietary community asset bingo where they are able to pull out partnerships that might not exist yet. And they're able to acknowledge that the people closest to the challenges are also closest to the solutions. And how can we just pull them in a room and get them to work better together? And so other upsides that we've been able to see with this approach is that it's not only morally aligned, but I think it's strategically superior, especially when communities are building upon the strengths and assets that they carry. What happens is that programs become more relevant, they become more specific, implementation becomes more effective, and then impact overall becomes more sustainable because we've gotten granular about who's affected, why, how, and when. And so the donor's role, then their adoption of this mindset and thinking tends to shift as well. They go from a directive position to more of a supportive one, and they go from dictation, like I know what you need, to a space of how can I help you build on what you already have? And I think what happens there is real courage on the part of the donor, yes, but also on the part of the organization. It takes real courage to shift this power dynamic for funders and organizations. So it's been really beneficial in the work to adopt this type of thinking, because it means letting go of what's comfortable, where you have been in a position of maybe being an expert historically. And for organizations, it means inviting communities into conversation with them to dig deeper into relationships that have also been traditionally happening behind closed doors, but bringing it more to the forefront and saying, hey, how can we all work together?
Definitely. And you mentioned this at the beginning, and I know that you focus on this a lot with the organizations that you work with, but this is such a leadership change, right? It's such a change in mindset for the nonprofits and their leaders to just change the overall approach and how things have maybe been done over the last decade, 2 decades, 3 decades, however long, and creating more sustainable partnerships.
Yes.
That might be partnerships with other nonprofits. That might be partnerships with other people in the community that aren't funders. And we all know that typically that starts from leadership, and that's not easy. But I don't know if you have a story or an example to share of maybe how you did that.
Yeah, I was actually just going to share that it's a shift in thinking, but it actually doesn't take that much more time. It's the same time that we would spend identifying the problem and dissecting that to the minutiae of its detail, we could actually just flip it and figure out how to invest that time to discover the assets, both tangible and intangible, things like physical spaces or organizations or businesses, the intangibles like community strengths, knowledge, cultural practices. What might it look like if we were to spend the investment on this side versus this side, and then be able to create forums or all of the similar steps we would take to addressing a problem, but adopt those steps to addressing a solution and strengthening that solution?
Yeah, I love it. Because like you said, it's oftentimes the same resources, the same people, the same amount of time. It's just taking a very different approach that leads to better, more sustainable results in the long run. So I think that's fantastic. We all know that the new 25 have created a lot of unknowns, uncertainty, ups and downs, and just a lot of rocky components, especially for nonprofits. Other industries as well, but nonprofits for sure have experienced that. And so as that reality continues to unfold, what are you seeing as far as how are nonprofits navigating these new economic challenges? Mm-hmm. What are some of the partnerships that they're creating, or how are they being a little bit more innovative? What are the real-time results that you're seeing just in the last 3 months?
Yeah, our clients were really scared in January, and that's understandably so. A lot of information came out with not a lot of context. And so when we're thinking and seeing how they've adapted to navigating these economic challenges, it's been significant. You know, they're up against rising operational costs. They're seeing an increase for service demands. They are fluctuating in funding. They're trying to plan strategically. And we've been so fortunate and grateful to be a partner alongside them in this work so that they are not alone. But we're seeing organizations respond really in one of two ways. Some are retreating. Some are cutting programs. They're reducing their outreach. They're figuring out what's essential, and they're trying to weather the storm by becoming smaller. That is their choice. Others we're seeing are advancing strategically. And they're deepening those community connections. They're figuring out how to diversify their funding sources. They're also strengthening their value proposition by leveraging different partnerships, relying on a lot of our resources. But what's interesting in both cases is that organizations are taking the second approach aren't necessarily better or well-resourced or more renowned. The ones that we are working with they have super strong community connections, and they're able to tap into local collective wisdom, especially for mutual aid and support right now during this challenging time. And so what they're building in the interim is relationship capital. And that's a resource I think that will transcend any economic downturn. So, you know, they're taking the time to maintain trust, and it's starting really with honest communication. We have a client right now, and when they were facing rising costs for their transportation of their mobile unit and dance supplies, they were really transparent about what the needs were with their community. And instead of scaling back classes these last 90 days or 100 days or so, they really decided to engage the parents more and volunteers who are in their universe. And they reimagined their whole approach. They were able to identify what the assets are in their network, the instructors, the vendors, the spaces. And it really led to a groundswell of parents coming together to reinforce the volunteer network. Their local dance store was able to offer them a significant discount on some of their dance materials. And even the students themselves, we were able to see them organizing around neighborhood fundraisers. And so they were able to create new opportunities, essentially, to address the potential or perceived gaps that might be coming their way with the federal funding challenges. And that approach really helped solve a lot of the issue. These individuals didn't just see themselves on the beneficiary end of this nonprofit organization, but really partners in the work. And they recognized that each one of them had a stake in the mission of this organization. And so their ecosystem had something valuable to contribute beyond financial, and they made it happen. That approach really required courage for them. And we were so proud to partner with them alongside to help build the framework, to help with the messaging, to help with the implementation.
You mentioned a couple of things that I think are really important to circle back to. One being that one of the most important pieces, I think, for this particular client, but I think you would argue for most, if not any organization, is honesty and communication. Mm-hmm. Can you dive into that a little bit more and what you have seen work in the last few months? And for an organization, someone that might be listening that hasn't been super transparent yet in their communication, is it too late for them? You know, how could they approach that now?
Yeah, sure. I mean, in a nutshell, we're really thinking about collaborative decision making. And so that demands that you be honest and transparent in what the realities are. And so collaborative decision making really strengthens resilience, to your earlier point, by distributing both the responsibility of an issue with the innovation potential of what we could do to address the issue across a broader network. You know, we involve the parents, we involve the students, other volunteers, vendors, et cetera. And so what we've been able to see in our work is that when communities decide to have really genuine and honest and transparent conversations, and they have an input into the future or direct trajectory of an organization, that translates across financial decisions. And they're often able to identify resource efficient approaches that may not have otherwise have been uncovered. And so this approach really, what it does for your organization is that it helps expand your problem solving capacity. It really helps you figure out what to do next when. Now, of course, there's an executive director and she's very much still leading the organization, but she has a brain trust now, and she's able to draw from a much richer pool of resources, insights, and potential solutions. And so we were really excited to have that community come together and watch this unfold in such a dynamic and beautiful and prosperous way.
Yeah, yeah. And that brings up another point that you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation. Economic shifts and challenges that organizations have faced this year thus far. You mentioned that those with solid community connections, those that have really established solid relationships in the past, are coming out ahead. And I completely agree with that. For those that might be listening that don't have those community connections, or at least they don't feel like they do, mm-hmm. they might have them somewhere. Again, you know, what would you say to those listeners that feel like they don't have that resource? Is it too late? You know, what can they do now to still create genuine, authentic relationships and community connections, not just passive or inauthentic ones to get through whatever they might be struggling with, but because I don't think this is a quick fix. I think you would agree with that. But what are some key steps that organizations can take during a difficult time to execute on a somewhat long-term community-centered approach?
Absolutely. At Architect, we always start with our values. You know, in a nutshell, we value authenticity. We value community. We value benevolence. We value kindness. And we value patience. And I start with that part because the second part is that how we operate in those things leads to these really important principles. It's that even if you feel like you don't have these super strong community connections, if you apply a framework like asset-based community development, you actually, I would challenge that you probably do, actually. And the most important thing to recognize upfront with that framework is that everyone has gifts. ABCD acknowledges that each person possesses some unique set of skills, talents, or knowledge that can contribute to a community. The second thing after that, I would say, is start with what you do have, emphasizing the existing resources or assets within your community as a foundation to development. And then other important principles of ABCD frameworks is that relationships build the community, and these things take time, thus having patience and benevolence and working with folks to focus on the strengths. Those things, they're not cookie cutter. They take time. They evolve. They require different things at different times. But that's the key. That's part of the key. Applying that type of framework leads to empowerment, community-driven initiatives, and overall clarity in where you're headed and how you get there.
Do you see many nonprofits partnering with other nonprofits?
And what? Yes.
You do.
Yeah, we do. We do. So we also have another partnership with our local United Way here in Charlotte. And every United Way affiliate is a little different. And so this one in particular is super impressive by way that they support and lift up their nonprofit ecosystem. And so through our partnership with them, we're really there in a coaching capacity. And part of our facilitation in classes is that we really do exercises that would encourage exactly that, encourage other nonprofits to identify parts of their ecosystem, parts of their mission that might be a mutual aid to another organization. And so I think when people have a stake in your organization's success and their own, you can garner support and financial stability along with advocacy power, volunteer support, and community accountability. So yes, we are seeing that in our work through that example, but in other clients that we've been able to serve nationwide, they're embracing this model as well. I think we'll start to see community-centric fundraising as beyond the buzzword that it is, but eventually like digging down deeper into what does that mean? And how can we actually like leverage community-centric initiatives, community-centric power, you know, tapping into those things that strengthen all of us in relationship to one another.
Absolutely. I think United Way is a fantastic example. And obviously there are plenty of nonprofits that do aim to partner with other nonprofits. While at the same time, I think a lot of us in the nonprofit industry see that oftentimes when we're talking about partnerships or fundraising or community-centric approaches, nonprofit leaders typically don't first think of other nonprofit leaders.
Right.
Not necessarily because it's competitive. Sometimes competition is the issue, but a lot of times they're just thinking about funding opportunities or getting more volunteers or whatever their needs might be at that time. And so we love it when we see nonprofits partnering with other nonprofits and just creating more relationships, more community support, like you've been talking about. I think we could all infer how this community-centered approach makes an organization more impactful and more financially resilient. But rather than make assumptions and rather than just move on, what are your insights there? How do you see nonprofits becoming more impactful and sustaining, you know, their financial fundraising needs by taking more of a community-centered approach?
Yeah, I think as by way of like places to start. I think if you're looking to shift toward a more community-centered approach in your work, I have a couple concrete steps that I would like to offer. I would start with an asset mapping exercise. I would get your team together, and that might mean your board members, your staff, other community representatives, maybe an advisory committee of some sort, or whatever networks you might have under your umbrella. And I would really walk them through an exercise that would identify the strengths and resources that you already have in your ecosystem. I would challenge you to look beyond the financial assets to include relationships, maybe knowledge, physical spaces, cultural resources, practices. These will reveal the possibilities that you might otherwise miss in searching for funding-only opportunities. After you take that step, I would create perhaps a feedback mechanism of some sort. And we do this work with clients as well. So something simple but consistent so that community members have a way to share their perspectives on your work and be able to respond to feedback in really, really, really visible ways so that we can garner and harness trust. Because when folks are able to see their impact, especially in creating the change that they would like to have, you deepen trust exponentially. After that second step, I would start to kind of harp on what everyone else is saying, which is diversify your revenue streams, which you should always be doing. But after that, those first two steps, you'll be able to more clearly see how diversity could come in, I think, in your revenue streams. And so maybe aiming for a few more distinct funding sources with no single funding source exceeding, call it 30% of your total budget or something like that. And then after you do those first few steps, you can really start to dig deeper into transforming your narrative. You'll have richer context around your messaging, how it highlights community need, how it highlights community strength. You can balance those two things together and really have agency, more agency, I think, over the direction of your work rather than leaning into becomingly tired tropes of, deficit-based thinking and savior dynamics. We can really start to move away from that type of thinking. I'm also a big proponent of trauma-informed storytelling as well. So really telling stories that honor the full spectrum of humanity and the people you are working with or potentially working on behalf of, in addition to what's going on and what's wrong. Maybe we can anecdotally balance that with sharing their dreams. What are their talents? What are their resilience? How have they overcome? These are the approaches that our team really works with organizations on to dig deeper and have messaging that resonates more deeply with your supporters while respecting the dignity of the community.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've had a lot of conversations about this lately, but honestly, a recent podcast I'm talking about ethical storytelling. Obviously, at Social Impact Solutions, we're helping organizations measure and communicate their impact. And with that, we focus on the numeric, quantitative side of things, as well as the story or qualitative pieces. I appreciate you mentioning both of those pieces, making sure that dignity, confidentiality, anonymity, all of that is observed whenever you are marketing and communicating the stories of those that you serve. So you've provided such wonderful insights. I really love your perspective, and it's a fairly unique one, not something that we hear from other partners or other leaders in the nonprofit world too often. So I think your approach is really fantastic, and I love the positive sum collaborative approach that you are taking and that you're helping your clients achieve. As we wrap up our conversation here today, I would love to just know, what are one or two final key takeaways that you would give to listeners, and how would you encourage them to implement these steps in the future?
Absolutely. Yeah, I hope to leave a message of hope. What really gives me hope, especially in this very tenuous time, is that we're seeing how organizations are becoming more creative, more collaborative, more community focused. And it takes genuine courage to do that. It takes courage to try something new, to share power, to build relationships, to step outside a comfort zone. But it's that same courage that creates organizations that are stronger, more impactful, and ultimately more sustainable for years to come. We're seeing remarkable bravery with folks opening themselves up to community wisdom and not retreating behind familiar walls. And so I would leave that kind word as a message of hope. Yeah, have the courage to try a new approach.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Lauren, for your time today. I really appreciate your insights. I know that listeners will get a lot out of this. As we close out here, can you just share a little bit about where listeners can find you and your company if they wanted to engage?
Absolutely. So at Architect, we're really committed to helping organizations build sustainable frameworks. You know, they say the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. So if today's conversation sparked any ideas for you, please feel free to reach out to our team for a virtual coffee or in conversation. In about 30 minutes, we can figure out some of the pain points and maybe explore some concrete next steps for your org. You can find us at www.architectyourambition.com, or you can connect with us directly on LinkedIn.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lauren.